Recording.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to a very special event. It is Uncanny Treks covers the final season of Star Trek Lower Decks. I was hoping there would be a campaign to keep this show alive, but Matt, it's America in 2024. Everybody just seems beaten down, worn out, and tired. So I think this is the final season of Lower Decks. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Matt, how you doing tonight?
Doing pretty well, Bob. This is season five, correct?
Season five.
Bob, you said everybody's feeling tired and beat down. The jokes, though, are still coming with this show. There's still a lot more material they got to cover, and they can cover. Let's go get an airplane, Bob, and fly something past Netflix or something. Get this back up for another season.
Well, and I did think you should do seven seasons of this show just for the joke of it being seven seasons, right?
All right. Like,
It's a shame. Well, Matt, we decided, as our loyal listeners, as our longtime listeners may or may not know, we started covering Lower Decks with season two. So we never actually talked about season one of Lower Decks on our show. And we thought it might be cute to commemorate the final season by covering season five up against season one. In this episode, we'll talk about the first two episodes of season five, and then we'll talk about the very first two episodes of the show, the first two episodes of season one. We think that might be a way to look at, in some ways, the show's come pretty far. In other ways, it hasn't moved at all, and it's still pretty much always what it was. It'll be an interesting perspective to close out Lower Decks.
It's like a perspective.
Matt got a new favorite word. I think it was episode two, which was cutiny.
Yeah,
just cutiny. A cute mutiny.
See, when Bob goes back to listen to this, though, he's going to realize that he used the word cute earlier when describing it. Hey, yeah, it's a little more subliminal with you, Bob.
Just so the listeners know, we're talking episode one of season five, Dos Cerritos, episode two of season five, Shades of Green. Both of those aired last Thursday. Then we're talking episode one of season one, Second Contact, which aired all the way back on August 6th, 2020, Matt. And then we're talking episode two, Envoys, which aired August 13th, 2020.
Those were the days, Bob, when I could stay at home and just watch Lower Decks all day.
Work from home, folks. It's great. We love it. So to begin with Dos Cerritos, to begin with season five, episode one, Matt, we start off with a chick, a white chick. But did you immediately notice that was Tindy in whiteface, Matt?
And the freckles were the tell, Bob. They did that on purpose. They gave her the freckles. And it instantly reminded me that, oh, yeah, last season's finale, Tindy is no longer on the Cerritos. She's a pirate who's working off the debt to her sister.
Yeah, her sister, De'Erica, I think is her name.
That is correct, yes.
And in a way, this is the show kind of answering our complaint, because I think it was after season three where Mariner goes and starts hanging out with this rogue bisexual archaeologist. And we were hoping that the show would have the adventures of Mariner as the rogue archaeologist for a while. And they didn't, and that felt like a disappointment. But here it seems we're committed to having Tindy as an Orion pirate.
At least two episodes here.
So in the opening credits for Lower Deck season five, you know, we always have that scene of the Cerritos running away from a battle. And the battle has escalated each opening credits of each season. I might be wrong, but I think the new additions to the battle in this season the final season, or you see the green hand that Apollo has in the original series, if you remember the green hand that grasps the Enterprise. And then it seems like you have the Tholian web from the original series as well.
Yeah, V'ger was added in too. You can see the V'ger probe from the motion picture. Towards the beginning, you can see the great koala in the stars. That's going to be a running joke from now on, or a running thing in Star Trek.
Well, speaking of running jokes, Matt, at the beginning, we see T'Lyn and Mariner play Kalto. Do you remember which Star Trek show that Vulcan game is from?
I don't remember what show, Bob, but it looks a lot like Jenga to me.
It is like Space Jenga.
Where am I supposed to have seen this, Bob?
Voyager, Matt. Tuvok loves his Kalto.
There's a couple of Voyager references here, Bob.
Yeah, after this, we find out that Naomi Wildman got into the Fleet Magazine's 30 Starfleet Officers Under 30, and she edged out Boimler, which is pretty funny.
So let me ask you this, Bob.
Yes.
Do you think when they're hiring the writers, they have certain writers who are specialized in certain shows?
It's funny.
This one knows all the Voyagers. This one knows all the Next Gen. If you go to this person for that, the historian of that. Because
they have one guy who's, I really like Star Trek Enterprise, and they're like, we don't need no Star Trek Enterprise.
But then on top of that, Bob, the writers, they're also comedians to some extent, because their job then is to take what their knowledge of Voyager and turn it into a joke or a gag of some sort or an Easter egg.
No, this is true.
It's another fun job I want, but it needs to pay well.
The theme of this episode seems to be Bob is dumb. And one way this is true is, in hindsight, it's so obvious, but I didn't clock that Dose meant that we would have a parallel universe at the same. I should have clocked that, but I did not clock that.
Did you catch that they mentioned that the singularities are increasing?
I heard it, but I didn't process it. They're saying that you think we're going to see more parallel universe stuff as the season goes on.
That's what they were implying there, so they can bring in more. What I really like about this, though, is that our universe, the prime universe, the alternate universe there is only slightly off by a minuscule amount. You rarely see that in Star Trek. Usually it's a whole complete overhaul, but they're just a little bit different.
Well, and I wasn't thinking about this while watching it, but now hearing you talk about it, we have Captain Becky Freeman and we have Bluebearded Boimler, who's a lot higher up in the alternate universe than he is in our main. You're saying this is like a universe where it's only slightly different, right?
Right.
But it reminds me of the 6th season episode of Next Generation, Tapestry.
Yes.
Where Hugh shows Picard, like, what would happen if he'd been less daring. And so he just winds up as this old sad sack lieutenant junior grade in the sciences. I find that pretty funny because it's basically our Freeman and our Boimler, or our Mariner and our Boimler, are basically the underachieving Picard from the alternate timeline in Tapestry. And that's a kind of funny joke to me.
The moral of the Tapestry story is so divisive when it comes to fan opinion. Because some people agree that what it's saying, Picard did not put in everything he needed to become that. But the others, his life really wasn't that bad, new life. And I always love those takes because they're absolutely right. It's really not bad to have that mundane thing. And Picard hates it. You don't really know what they're trying to teach with it. What's the moral here?
Just imagine after that episode, Picard walking on the ship, and every time he sees someone who's under the rank of lieutenant, he's just this poor son of a bitch. Why doesn't he just kill himself?
Exactly. Well, is that the message it's conveying? Some people say that is what it is.
I guess the most charitable read of that is you could say, well, some people want a mundane life and some people don't.
Yeah.
But it's hard to, that could then very much turn into this weird hierarchical argument.
Guys, we like to stick with the lower decks.
Hey-o. Yeah. One of my favorite points to this episode was De'Erica yelling at Tendi that, you miss debating the ethics of goop with your stupid nerds. That really made me laugh. We also get a lot of Orion backstory here. They're talking about there was this bad plague 3 centuries before with the Orions. And I was wondering if they were making that up or if that was coming out of some of the shared universe stuff. I know there was a tabletop strategy game in the 70s called, I want to say, Starfleet Command, that had a lot of backstory on the Orions and gave them this wild history. So I wonder if that's from that or if that's from just something the writers made up. I'm not sure.
No, it could be. Yeah, I wasn't aware of that. I didn't know there was a strategy game.
We don't get any confirmation of this, but Erica says that a rogue archaeologist tipped her off to finding this old Orion raider, and I was hoping that was Mariner's ex.
It could be. Anytime I hear the word archaeologist, I always think of either her or Vash.
Her or Vash, for sure. And then, Matt, we started in season 4 of this show comparing Lower Decks to the original Star Trek cartoon, and obviously we didn't finish all of the original Star Trek cartoon. We'll probably do maybe 2 episodes at the end of Lower Decks to wrap up the original Star Trek cartoon. But this would be a time where it would have been useful for you to have seen the last set of original episodes, because the blue Orions in this show look exactly like the Orions look in the one episode of the original Star Trek cartoon that they're in. And that was the first time we'd ever seen the Orions, except you see Orion slave girls in the original series, but you don't see any other type of Orion. The one episode where they're the villain, Journey to Babel, the Orions are totally not on screen.
Yeah, and they look completely different. Like, they're wearing different looking outfits. They look nothing like the ones on the TV.
So they play that up here as the green Orions are the Orions we're more familiar with, that look like the Orion slave girls or look like the Orions in, I think, Star Trek Enterprise. Whereas the blue Orions are the animated design.
There's a distinctive difference in the way that its name is pronounced. It's
that's a joke about how they said Orion on the animated series.
I need to watch that episode. And I'm assuming that's season 2 of the animated series.
It's season 2. I think it's called the the Pirates of Orion. Matt, I'll get us the explicit tag for this episode because one of my favorite lines from this episode is Becky Freeman saying, "What in the Kazinti fuck is going on here?" That really made me laugh.
Bob, this season, and then also going back and rewatching the first season, I am okay with them using that censor beep sound. At first, I remember it being an issue when we first started watching this show for me, because we haven't heard a lot of cussing in Star Trek, and it felt out of place. But now that we've had 5 seasons of the show, it's fine when we have it. It doesn't feel out of place.
Well, and for the style of humor and the style of animation, correct, Lower Decks,
it's allowed to be a little more crude than the Next Generation. You're not going to have as many F-bombs being dropped in Picard. Did you notice there was a joke within the show where all the characters in the alternate universe or whatever, they were congregating to talk about what was going on, and that Captain's Freeman, that ship's Freeman goes and breaks it up, you know, and she says no interpersonal relationships are allowed on the ship. That was one of the things for Star Trek The Next Generation, that the characters on the ship were not allowed to have interpersonal relationships. That was one of his mandates in the first couple of seasons, which is one of the reasons I think didn't he get kicked off or he passed away or something like within the first couple of seasons?
I did watch that Chaos on the Bridge documentary, which was a pretty fun documentary.
That's where that came from, yes. That's where that comment came from.
One of the jokes I really liked was, you know, in this episode, Mariner just becomes her mother and she's yelling at her other self, "Don't give me that sarcastic Vulcan salute."
We also got a bunch of references, though, Bob, to Starbase 80. And I had completely forgotten about Starbase 80.
Me too.
So I went and looked back. I actually went back and looked at some of our coverage, and we were actually got to see what Starbase 80 looks like on the inside, because I think Mariner ended up getting assigned to it after something happened in one of the episodes. But it's really just a garbage scale type place.
I think it was
place.
After her mom, after she got clipped out of context saying bad stuff about the Cerritos.
That's right. Yeah, for that documentary thing. Yes, when they were doing all those interviews. Yes. So I was a little disappointed, though, that we find out it really is just a place. It's not taken care of. It's got outdated stuff. They were Star Trek, the motion picture technology, and the uniforms were one size fits all. That was the issue with it.
That's funny. Well, I guess my last point for this episode, Matt, were you a little disappointed that we didn't have alternate universe Mariner replace our Mariner? And that way you could have had some adventures of our Mariner as the new captain in the alternate universe, and then you could have fish out of water of new Mariner in place of our old Mariner.
Yeah, I feel like that's what they were going to do until that last couple of minutes when they, you know, they decide to pull out of that and have our Mariner shoot ship. I don't know how interesting that would have really been. And like I said before, I don't think the alternate reality stuff is over. It also seems like they could have done something to play off what happened with Discovery, with those characters who have come over from the Mirror Universe and have a similar type feel to it.
That would have been funny. I was wondering if that was going to be the reveal, that this was actually the Mirror Universe Cerritos, but it didn't go that way, which was fine. Matt, who was your character of the episode?
Well, my character of the episode, Bob, it goes to our arm wrestling Shaxes. There were two Shaxes, and they were both bonding over killing Cardassians.
Nice. I'm going to give it to Lynn. Since Tendi is absent, basically Talin finally gets to be a main cast member. I think they were kind of doing stuff with her in season 4, if I recall correctly.
That is correct.
After not doing anything at all with her in season 3, which was weird. But it's nice to see it get a little bit more prominence. And you know what? Maybe there's hope for Jyn the Andorian as well. Next episode is Shades of Green, Matt. And I wanted to open up. This is episode 2 of season 5. I wanted to open up. Did you get Batman the Animated Series vibes off this opening on Orion or Orion, depending on how you pronounce it?
To some degree, yeah. The animation really stuck with me. It looked a lot like what I was thinking, the way it panned up.
Like you say in the notes, you replace banks and museum robberies. We have a neologism in this episode, Matt. We have Boimler. He's coined a new word. The word is boiter, and it's literally the worst thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, I thought I was just hearing him wrong at first, but no, that he was literally saying boiter in place of pointer. It's rough.
Do you know what DS9 episode this Orion or Orion cell race is the tribute
to? Of course I do, Bob. This is an extremely important episode because this is one of the very few times we see Sisko with both a goatee and hair on his head.
Do you like that look, Matt?
I do. It's one of those weird middle. It's one of those weird looks. Like, I give you a good example, Bob. Red face Sting. Didn't last very long. This is Wolfpack Sting look. But yeah, this was the episode was Explorers. It was season 3, episode 22. And we actually covered that episode when we were comparing to Babylon 5. And that episode we compared it to was Confessions and Lamentations, which was a Franklin-centric episode where he was trying to cure some mystery disease that was taken out. More cabs.
Is that the one where they have to actually create a plague sector on the station?
That is correct, yes.
Oh, that is a pretty dark episode.
And it hit us pretty hard back then because that was when we were going through the pandemic, Bob.
Ah, yes.
Oh, yeah. During them times, back in the pandemic days.
Well, to go back to Lower Decks, the plot in this one is that, or at least like the sort of a sensible purpose of this one is that the Cerritos crew is helping a society that's transitioning off of capitalism into post-scarcity. And so we get a lot of funny new words, right? We talk, you know, we have the elitist terror cells who are the capitalists who don't want to give up their wealth. We have, I can't remember if it was Boimler or Mariner yelling, "We're on official post-scarcity business." That was very funny.
Yeah, another one of the words, Bob, they dropped was cutiny.
Which, yeah, that was from the Orion plot where we have a cute mutiny.
I have to say, well, I'm probably going to use that at work somehow. I don't know how. We don't have unions here.
Well, I think you do, but they're just toothless. Matt, I wanted to ask. So we've cleared up who the Orions and the Orions or the blue Orions and the green Orions are. Yeah. But I was a little confused at the end. Did they explain why the blue Orions are now working for De'Erica?
Not really. I thought it had something to do with the laughing gas, but no, that's not it.
Since the Orion magistrate or whoever she is confiscated both houses' wealth, but now the Orions have the wealth that the Cerritos got from the planet that's going post-scarcity.
Right.
Maybe they can afford to hire the blue Orions who are penniless and have to work. Maybe that's the principle.
That makes sense.
Just me trying to like headcanon it. All right, Matt, who's your character of the episode?
My character of the episode, Bob, goes to Talyn, and that was for her fixing and destroying the shuttle because that was special to Rutherford and Tindy. It was something they did when they had time to work together.
That was sweet. There's literally nothing to this character. But one of Boimler's new ensigns is a Tellarite, and I do like having Tellarite characters, so I'll give it to this Tellarite, whose name I didn't bother to look up.
Honestly, that little side plot, those two characters, the way their characters were handled, I almost picked one of the other one. I don't know. It wasn't a Tellarite, though. I did, Bob, for real, because they were interesting. They were extremely interesting.
They're suffering under the tyranny of Boimler. That's inherently sympathetic.
Exactly. They went so far as to fake their own deaths to get away from Boimler.
I mean, wouldn't you?
All right, Bob.
Travel time, Matt.
We're going back in time. We're going all the way back to the first season. And let me tell you something, Bob. It is so strange to go back and watch the first season this way. I remember a lot of the plot points, but some things are different. One of the best parts about this, too, is that we get to watch the intro and we get to see where it started versus where it is the final season. And they're so different. They've added so much to the intro.
The actual opening scene is we have a drunk Mariner accidentally stabs Boimler. And I assume when I first saw this show, I probably thought that was excessive. In hindsight, I'm no, Boimler deserves that and so much more.
Yeah. And we'll talk a little bit about this at the end of the episode too, Bob. But I just feel like, I felt like they were really taking risks with some of these like things they were doing in these.
I might disagree with
you. Just said though, you probably would have found that excessive because it doesn't fit Star Trek. It's Cartoon Network-ish.
Another interesting thing that they start with and that doesn't stick around is that Boimler, when he first meets Tindy, is weakly macking on her.
I'm really glad they dropped that. I don't think that should have gone anywhere.
Yeah. Do you remember, Matt, the first time you saw that the Lower Deckers sleep in hallway bunks? Did that surprise you?
Yeah, it really did because it seemed like everyone else had decent quarters on the ship in the other shows that we've watched. But then again, we were only following the senior officers and senior staff. So then you're like, oh, okay. So they're the ones with the nice quarters.
Matt, were you triggered when Mariner shows up in Picard's nemesis dune buggy?
Bob, I get triggered by all dune buggy scenes. Dune buggies are awful.
I see you. I hear you. You're valid.
Have you ever ridden in one, Bob?
Yes, I have.
They're painful. Painful.
Yeah, they jostle you around. They jostle you around. So I was really astonished, Matt. In the pilot, Mariner mentions her time in Ascension Cave, which is, I think, we're actually shown in the season 4 finale, or maybe not the season 4 finale, but a late episode in season 4 where they're all in a cave. We also have a really famous image, at least to me. This is a defining image of Lower Decks, which is Boimler getting hurled around by a giant alien monster. As the farmer yells to Mariner, "It's okay, she's a herbivore. She's just gumming on him to sponge out some of his fluid."
Okay. I laughed so hard the first time I saw this, and then I laughed so hard last night when I watched this again. Oh, that is the funniest scene. That former dude is hilarious. He immediately says after that, "You want a snack or something?"
Mariner's like, "Yeah, you got any of that milk?"
Later on, Rutherford makes a monkey's joke,
which I had to believe was solely targeted at my uncle, who is both a big Star Trek fan and a big monkeys fan.
It had to be just for that demographic, Bob. I'm like, well, why was anyone making a monkey's joke in 2020?
Barnes describes it as ancient Earth classical
myth
and monkeys. Which, granted, that's not a new joke in science fiction.
Oh, no.
Still, it's a joke I enjoy.
Yeah.
And another joke I really liked also has a consumption-based humor is Ransom yelling, "Did I eat flesh?" And Tindy's like, "Only a little." And Ransom's like, "How much flesh did I eat?" We end the episode with a lot of references to old Star Trek stuff, Matt. And were you a little sad that even super nerd Brad Boimler doesn't know who Gary is?
Doesn't even know. Gary Mitchell does not have a lasting effect on a lot of people.
It makes me sad. I like Gary Mitchell.
All right, Bob. So we've reached the end of this episode of the pilot episode of Lower Decks. And do you think they took a risk pushing the limits so early on with this episode with having...
No, I
but
don't.
You don't think with the nudity, the cussing, the weird references to things, even the scene with Boimler coming out of the slime looked like something from Rick and Morty or something.
No, I don't think it was a risk. Enterprise, the JJ movies, and Discovery had already broken the formula in different ways so much. As we've established on this podcast before, I only watch animation that has intellectual property. I don't actually watch other animation. But from what I understand, this is so familiar and so much like Rick and Morty and every other adult animation on TV. And to the point where I think if I did actually like watch Futurama or Rick and Morty, it would probably make me hate Lower Decks. But because I have it, I can stay kind of pure. The Star Trek formula has already been long broken. It's just an imitation, from what I understand, of what the dominant form of adult animation humor is. I don't see it as being a huge risk at all.
Were they trying to target a younger audience with these types of things? You mentioned your uncle. I don't feel like your uncle would watch this, but they did put a monkey joke in there.
He watches it because I buy him the DVDs, but he doesn't. He probably wouldn't care enough to seek it out if I didn't buy him.
Gotcha. See, and that's what I'm wondering. Are they excluding that audience to bring in a new audience?
Well, it's also just how likely is my uncle to get then CBS All Access, now Paramount Plus? Not super. And I don't know. The fact that we got 5 seasons of it, I don't know if that's a testimony to the strength of the Star Trek brand or if it's a testimony just to, in an earlier era of streaming, you could do anything, which is that's coming to a close. Or maybe it actually did do a good job of like getting long-term fans with deep cut humor and getting newer fans by being so similar to Rick and Morty and Futurama.
I mean, that could be it, yeah. And definitely with the animation style, it fits the same sort of standards of what we see, you know, today. You're 100% right about that. That's what most adult animation looks like, Western animation.
Yeah.
I just wonder sometimes if they did also take a risk just it being animated, because we're so used to live action Star Trek. And the only other animation we had up to this point was the 70s animated series, which I find charming now that you forced me to watch it. But looking at it from far away, it looks like it's insane.
Well, I would say no, though, because granted, it's a very different animation, but Star Wars had already very much proved that you could take a successful science fiction franchise and move it into animation. Now, granted, that the Star Wars animation was more serious and more kid-friendly and more CGI aesthetic, so it's very different in those ways, but I still think that the Star Wars example was why this wasn't so much of a risk, if that makes sense.
And Prodigy, Bob, is proof that we couldn't get enough of it.
Was so influential that they just had to totally duplicate the aesthetic in a much worse way in Star Trek Prodigy.
All right,
which
Bob,
even with that crap, they got 2 seasons from.
All right, Bob. So for the first episode of Lower Decks, season 1, character of the episode goes to Shaxx, for the joke that becomes somewhat long running, where he recommends we detonate the entire warp port anytime something goes wrong on the ship. I love it. That's why Shaxx is my character
it's
of the episode.
Joke. It's a great joke. Yeah. Mine is Dr. Tiana for yelling. And, you know, obviously she's my favorite character on the show. Her yelling, "Nobody's authorized to pass out."
Yeah,
exactly.
All right, Bob. So the second episode of Lower Decks in season one was entitled Envoys. And we're introduced to a Klingon character who they were having to escort. And we find out that most Klingons have apostrophes in their name. Why does Worf not have an apostrophe in his name?
Well, yeah, we can reference Young Justice again, Matt, and the Martians on Young Justice show us the way. So we just need to say Wa'orf.
Wa'orf. Bob, from this point forward, he shall be known as Wa'orf for us.
Yeah. Maybe let's even put a second O in there. Wa'orf.
Wa'orf. I like it. Looks like woof, but I can still read the, yeah.
We'll go back to one. Wa'orf. Maybe even a double apostrophe.
All right. Bob, going back and having to rewatch this first season, I have decided that Rutherford as well is Egon Spengler. And I don't know. I know you're not as familiar with Ghostbusters as I am, but I grew up.
I know who Egon is, basically.
I'm not just talking about Egon from the movies. I'm also talking about Egon from the real Ghostbusters animated series. Spot on. The more I watch Rutherford, especially in these early episodes, and then where he ends up in the future, he is Egon.
Okay.
But in Star Trek.
The first thing I really liked about this episode was when General Corrin snorts bloodline all over Boimler in his dress uniform. As a noted Boimler hater, that was very satisfying.
I don't like dress uniforms that much either, just because they're ugly. So I was glad they got bloodline all over
them. Props to Boimler for getting like that early next gen dress
uniform. Yeah. Yeah, the worst of the lot, man. Those are those.
They're terrible, yeah. But I sort of like them.
Bob, I learned something new about Section 31 that apparently they...
Also from Boimler.
Yeah, from Boimler. They apparently speedwalk to conserve energy. Were you aware of this?
That was pretty funny. I did like that General Corrin is going north in search of stronger ale to the Andorian district. He's leaving the Klingon district behind. That cracked me up. And then I did have a question, Matt. So they never actually say what the Janeway Protocol is when Rutherford's getting trained by Ransom. But is it ejecting your children into space as a distraction?
I'm just saying, you can insert any coffee joke you want here, Bub. That's the Janeway Protocol.
Instead, Matt, I'll just say, speaking of injections, do you want to see more of the ambage and the egg injecting into Boimler's throat? I kind of do. That sounds great.
Yeah, that's pretty nasty. I have to admit, pretty gross.
Matt, did the presence of the Vendorian thief mean a lot more to you since you've now seen the animated series episode with the Vendorian shapeshifter?
It really has, Bob. I mean, if you are watching Lower Decks now in 2024 and you're going back, and if you're rewatching it with us, go back and rewatch this animated series from the 70s. I've learned so much. It improves these episodes.
And so many of the gags
from
Lower Decks are from that show.
Deep cut Star Trek. And I think there's legit writers who their specialty is just the animated series. And that's why they can pull this stuff and make it put together. It's so well put together. But
the character of episode 2, Envoys.
I'm going to give it to General Corrin, Bob.
That's fair, man. That's fair. I'm going to give it to Rutherford. I really like his line when the computer says casualties in the simulation were 105%. And Rutherford's like, how did I kill more than the entire crew?
That's a good question. That was another one. That's another one I bust out laughing. This show has so much just like bust out laughing jokes. I love it. Like, how do that with Star Trek too? I used to watch The Simpsons growing up. We watched it every night. It came on at 7 o'clock during the weekdays.
You did, Matt. I did. Bart was disrespectful to authority, I was not allowed.
You weren't allowed to. Well, I feel like this is one of those shows that they could have put on at like 7 o'clock on any channel, and I would just watch it, just have it on repeat. It's so funny, so good. Just, it's Star Trek.
Obviously, The Simpsons is very much an influence here, right?
Right. And I also, not to use the bad words, Bob, but it's also, this is not Star Trek Family Guy. That is very clear. The quality of the writing is much better than what you see on your average episode
of
Family Guy.
It sort of is, though, just with the structure of always references, right? And now, granted, there's some humor that's not references.
But it does not do cutaways. It does not do cutaways. As long as it doesn't, it never does that. And that makes it very distinct. Family Guy was really bad about that.
I think you're right that it doesn't do cutaways, but I still think the style of reference humor is very similar to Family Guy. But it does at least do jokes beyond references.
It's also to a niche audience, though, Bob, whereas Family Guy is more just about anyone. only your target audience is really going to get most of the jokes. That's why the writing has to be at a higher level than Family Guy.
On a happy note, Lower Decks is back. We got 8 more episodes of it. I'm delighted to see 8 more episodes of it. Truly, it and Strange New Worlds are the only new Star Trek.
I agree, 100%. All right, Bob.
All right. Well, this has been Uncanny Treks. I'm Bob at Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Have a great night, everybody.
Thanks for listening.